From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
And good morning, good Chiefs Raiders day. It'll get handled when it gets handled day, right? And what Mahomes said back in training camp. So, yes, little rivalry day for us. Jay Binkley, Quint Morris as usual. Our Sunday morning foray into the sports world, which I like the fact that we do this every Sunday, like I've told you, because you can get these college football takes off while they're fresh, you know, fresh from last night. And we have the NFL going on that day. Next week, we'll have to wait till, well, it'll be a lot of Chiefs and Buccaneers, but the Chiefs don't play till Monday night. But they play the Raiders later this afternoon. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, and a good college football night last night, even though it got a little close.
For your Wildcats,
my Wildcats,
yes.
It got a little close there. I was at a Halloween party with some of my buddies. One of them is a KU fan, had the game on. Let's just say I was talking trash.
Was he dressed as a KU fan for Halloween, or was he actually a KU fan?
He's actually a KU fan.
Oh, okay.
And I was talking some trash early in the night, and I almost ate my words there. So, thankfully, 51-yard field goal, which is not often what you see in college football.
Which is really weird. You're right. College kickers. This is weird, though, because we've seen 56, 58, 59-yarders from these college kickers, and we've seen them turn around. Same guy. Turn around and miss like a 34-yarder. Been very, very weird to your kicking.
Yeah, I think some people forget just how good NFL kickers are, especially here in Kansas City, because we've had Harrison Butker for so long. We're just like, some of these things, oh, they're automatic.
Yeah, you take it for granted.
And they are not, especially in college football, because the talent is less.
It had to have been hard as a K-State fan last night. Ugh. Because you're so excited about the season, and you were dancing that fine line between the Pop-Tarts Bowl
and the college football playoffs.
I mean, that seriously, it's one hand you had the Pop-Tart Bowl again, and the other hand you had maybe the college football playoffs. I mean, and you know, you look back at the numbers for Avery Johnson were actually, you know, really good. But that's what's going to happen. And I know rivalry games and all that, Sunflower Showdown, but K-State had won 15 straight. I mean, and I get it. A lot of that's before Lance Leipold got there, so things turn around. But I will say this, both those guys are winners. With Lance Leipold winning at the Division III level, what, six national titles? Chris Klieman winning four at the FCS level. They have a tremendous amount of respect for each other. But I felt Jalen Daniels, Avery Johnson, nice little showdown between those teams. But it was in Manhattan, and I expected this time of year for Kansas State to kind of put their foot down on the gas.
Hey, I'm just happy that we got a great play by KU. You know, big smart brain play. Making sure you establish yourself in bounds before you step out of bounds on the kickoff. I mean, just phenomenal play by him.
That was interesting.
Never seen anything like it, Jay.
No, there was a lot of things I hadn't seen. I mean, college football, the officiating continues to be rough. That Ohio State-Nebraska game, I know there's a lot of Nebraska fans to live here in the area, but they got a tremendous break because that was not targeting by Ohio State. I mean, what are you supposed to do as a defender? He hit him in the shoulder. I mean, there was no lowering of the crown to the head. I don't know if you know the play I'm talking about, but it was a very crucial play towards the end of the game. Ohio State is a point in the game, but they're missing that player now for the first half of the next game against Penn State.
who has been phenomenal this year. And
but that was not targeting. That was not even close to targeting.
It's crazy that. And I don't know if it's just because we have more games on, you know, sort of like on their own, like in the NFL, but it does seem like officiating, it just continues to be a problem across all sports, right? Like we had in game one of the World Series, there were so many horrible ball and strike calls. So, I mean, it just seems like this continues to be a problem across all sports. It's not an NFL problem. It's not a college football problem. It's a sports problem.
Yeah, I was talking to Mitch Schwartz at our Friday football show we had at Buffalo Wild Wings out in Olathe, which, by the way, will be in Lee's Summit this week. So we'll be in Lee's Summit for the fans football show. I was asking Mitch, you know, the officiating has been, you know, so bad, especially in the NFL. And like about 40% of those guys are full-time employees now, which they all should be full-time employees. Do you know what a lot of the, you know, jobs are of these guys that are NFL officials?
Yeah, they're like lawyers on
lawyers,
the side.
Lawyers, CEO, financial advisors. There's high school principals. No, you're getting paid that amount of money. If you don't want to do it and you want to do your, you know, job as a lawyer or whatever, go do that. But the NFL needs full-time officials. It's a high-paying job, and it's one that's got to be accurate. This is a billion-dollar industry. This is the number one sport in our country, and it needs to be officiated by the best. Baseball, that's another thing, too. Automated strikes and balls. I mean, let's go. It's 2024. What are we waiting for? We can open our damn garage doors with our cell phones, but we can't get balls and strikes. This is 2024 again. Let's go forward.
Yeah, the NFL also needs to get that sky judge, you know, so like that, you know, non-face mask call on Thursday night, that can get called because you have somebody who's there who can just, you know, radio down, hey, by the way, toss the flag down, there was a face mask. And, you know, I'm excited. I hope it happens next year in baseball. You know, they've got the challenge system for balls and strikes down in the minor league system. I was at an Omaha Storm Chasers game in June, and I saw it in person.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
And you still got the home plate umpire.
The home plate umpire
still does
his thing.
You get you know, the slide at home plate. Are you safe? Are you out? And to be honest with you, it would probably help these guys out too because you get a little bit of a break. I mean, it's got to suck when it's 100 degrees in mid-July and you're squatting down behind the catcher the whole game. I mean, seriously, it's got to suck.
Yeah,
but they do it and they get well paid for it. So
the challenge system, I think, will be very good for the MLB if they promote it to the top to the MLB this year. You know, the pitcher, batter, catcher, and manager all have the ability to challenge it. All you see them do is they just tap their head and. At being in the stadium when they did the challenge call, they put up like a 3D image of the strike zone on the Jumbotron. It's very dramatic. It was very good as a participant in the crowd to be able to see that. And I think it'll be good for the sport as well because you're going to remove a lot of those egregious, you know, ball and strike calls, right? Because you're just going to be like, that was way off the plate. Let me challenge it. So I think that'll be good for baseball next year. So hopefully, you know, we start limiting a lot of these really bad calls in baseball.
It's interesting. And, you know, part of it is, you know, with the advancement in 4K TV and everything else we have, I mean, you could see replays really, really clear at home. It's not just the officials can see. I mean, you can see it at clear, whether you're at home, whether you're sitting in the bar and you can have half the time if you're at a bar watching a game, those people know within 20 seconds where it may take a minute and a half for an official to do it. But the advancements in technology, you kind of know what's going on before they do. I mean, you really do. That helps. But also, if these leagues want to get in bed with gambling and the DraftKings and the FanDuels and all this, there's a lot of money at stake to get things right.
You have to be buttoned up. Especially, you know, with
if you want to take all that money from them, that's fine. I mean, it's free country. But if you're going to do it, get it right.
Be buttoned up. And, you know, the old mantra that if you asked 100 drunk guys in a bar and they can all come to the same conclusion on whether it was a fumble or a catch or anything then, you know, that's the sort of decisions that should be made. It's so frustrating when, you know, you watch a play and you're like, how was this called? And then they, you know, don't get an explanation. That's why when I think it was the USFL, when they had the sky judge, not only did they have the sky judge, but they also had them explaining to the fans that were watching the game why they made that decision. And I think that if there was more transparency in that sense, I think that would really help fans understand where they're coming from. Because, you know, maybe we would disagree with it, but we would also understand where you're coming from and we can all go our separate ways.
Yeah, the 660 is asking us right here on the text line. By the way, our Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Did either of you happen to watch the Nebraska-Ohio State game? Your thoughts on the screw job by the river? Yes, we were talking about that because that was not targeting. But Ohio State ends up winning the game. The other thing, too, Missouri, the Alabama game, the fair catch. And I know Missouri, just we'll get to them. They were just absolutely rolled by Alabama. Drew Pine sucks, by the way. It was one of the worst quarterback. Honestly, this is one of the worst quarterback performances I've ever seen in my life. And I watch a lot of football, to be honest. You know that. But the fair catch, if you call a fair catch, you can advance it. And, you know, they go back to the rules officials and say, well, he was bobbling the ball. True. He was bobbling the ball.
But then you
the
can't
fair catch.
Turn upfield.
But he turned upfield. I mean, there was a conscious effort to turn upfield. And Like, the announcers didn't get that. It was so bad. I mean, they're watching the rules officials. Like, wait a minute. I understand the bobbling the ball and getting possession. You need to do that. But you can't turn and be facing forward. That was an advancement of an onside kick, which is highly illegal.
And Missouri's head coach was losing it on the
Eli
sideline.
Eli was pissed. I don't blame him, though, because that was
free
and clear.
Yeah.
And what the SEC will do, they'll go back. They'll send Missouri a letter this week and say, we were wrong on that call. It doesn't matter, though. Missouri was absolutely hammerjacked against Alabama.
Yeah, you and Drew will have a fun conversation about that here at the 11 o'clock hour.
Oh, we will. I mean, that's just, I understand, you know, you lose your starting quarterback, Brady Cook. But do you think Indiana complained? They lost their, quote, Heisman Trophy Rourke quarterback that they had. Indiana, they go Taven Jackson, backup quarterback at Indiana. They go to 8-0. They beat Washington at home. You know, you got to have a backup, man, especially in college football. You got Neil Money and all this. And I understand Sam Horn's hurt and you don't have him this year. But you got to have something better than Drew ride the pine. That was. I mean, those interceptions were absolutely peewee football-esque.
Yeah, and, you know, we know college football lies about height and weight. No way in hell is Drew Pine 5'11". No way. That guy, no. He can't see over. He was struggling to see over the line like Kyler Murray, okay? There's no way that Drew Pine is 5'11".
But Kyler Murray finds a way to, like, get out of the pocket and scramble.
Yeah, he's
around.
Athletic enough to where he can overcome it. Drew Pine is not.
Yeah, I mean, the height and weights are always funny, especially receivers. We, like, on character concerns, we take a real, you know, hard look. And you're always, we always look, if you're 6'3", no, you're actually about 6'1.5" when they get to the combine and measure them. That's just the way it goes. That's the home cooking you get on the home rosters. That's the way it was in high school. You know, we were, quote, 250 when we actually were, like, 230. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because your scholarships are riding, like, you know, there's a big difference between being 6'2", 250 and being 6', 220. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's a scholarship on the line. Now, in today's, you know, game, you know, linebackers are smaller. You can be 6', 5'11", stuff like that, as long as you got the speed to play linebacker. But there's some dollar signs mixed in with height.
Yeah, and, you know, being a talked-about draft prospect, you know, we hear, like, wide receivers, like you just brought up, you know, there's a difference between being a 6'1" wide receiver and a 5'11" wide receiver. Like, those inches matter, especially when you're trying to make it into the NFL.
Yeah, no question about it. So we got college football. We'll talk to Drew Nixon, as we do each and every week at 11 o'clock, about a wild college football slate. It was the first time this year you had five games matching both teams that were ranked in those games. Great weekend of college football, and locally too. If you're a Kansas fan and you gave K-State all they want, it's got to be frustrating if you're Kansas when you have those close losses at the end of the game. Got to be extremely frustrating. Or for Kansas State, that fully probably expected to pound Kansas in that game. And Missouri, they just got rolled at A&M. They got rolled at Alabama. I mean, this team is a team that Gary Pinkel had in the SEC title game twice, so it can be done. But Alabama is extremely vulnerable this year, and they were extremely vulnerable in that game, but Missouri gave them absolutely no challenge. There was absolutely zero hope for the Missouri Tigers. We'll talk about the Chiefs and Raiders coming up next, the Chiefs' dominance over the Raiders, and will it be the game that they don't want to see, the Puppet Gate?
Stuff like that happens. It'll get handled when it gets handled.
Well, today at 3:25, it can get handled. We'll discuss that next. And welcome back, Jay Binkley, Quentin Morris. Happy Sunday to you. Happy Revenge Sunday, so to speak. Raiders, Chiefs, Las Vegas. Chiefs 4-0 at Arrowhead West. They won the Super Bowl there this past year at Allegiant Stadium. Andy Reid, 5 wins inside Allegiant Stadium. Josh McDaniels, the all-time leader inside that stadium, was 6. So Andy Reid could tie for the most wins by a head coach in Allegiant Stadium today.
Raiders are so dysfunctional, and I love it.
You know, they really are, and I call this 2.0, AFC West 2.0. It's the second round. Remember a couple years ago when everybody spent the money? Russell Wilson goes to Denver. Sean Payton goes in there. Didn't work. J.C. Jackson, Khalil Mack, company go to the Chargers. Brandon Staley was there. It's Jim Harbaugh. Raiders, Devontae Adams comes in. Chandler Jones, Joshua Daniels. It's 2.0 right now in the AFC West. Chargers, that's going fine. The Raiders or the Broncos and their defense, the way they're playing, Do they have the answer in Bo Nix? I don't think so, but we'll see what happens. But this is 2.0 as far as the AFC West is concerned. But Andy Reid has been absolutely dominant against the Raiders in his career. Matter of fact, 11-2 in the last 13, 16-3 in the last 19, last 22, 18-4. Of course, the game last year, it woke the Chiefs up. I mean, they did lose the Raiders at home on Christmas Day. It ruined everybody's Christmas. It did. It was cold in the stockings is what it was. Aiden O'Connell didn't have a completion in the second, third, and fourth quarter, and they found a way to. The Super Bowl champions lost the game, not yielding a completed pass by Aiden O'Connell in that game. But it woke the Chiefs up because they hit that crossroads, I always call it, Quentin. The Chiefs had two ways to go. Either they could feel sorry for themselves, they're down, they lose the Bengals the next week, who knows what could happen, but you have two ways to go. Dynasty or downfall. Dynasty or downfall, they chose dynasty. But the Raiders game did wake them up last year.
It had to, right? That was the last chance, because after that, the schedule got difficult again, and you were facing the Bengals, who, you know, were also in a playoff hunt, and it was just like, what are you doing? The Bengals were down, their quarterback was hurt, what are you going to do? And if the Chiefs would have moseyed on in there and felt bad for themselves, there's a chance that the Chiefs lose to the Bengals, and, you know, we're talking about them maybe not hosting a playoff game, maybe not being in the playoffs, because that was a game that we see other teams all around the league. You know, you lose one game, it quickly turns to two, it turns into three, and that can end your season. Because the Chiefs, let's be honest, last year, you know, they were on the verge of us talking about them. Is this team going to miss the playoffs? You know, is that the conversation that we were having last year in Kansas City?
It was dynasty or downfall, man.
It really was.
It was an interesting predicament that the Chiefs were in, that was for sure, but it woke them. It completely woke him up. Our phone number, 913-586-7965. Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Speaking of the Bengals that you mentioned, T. Higgins inactive today for the Cincinnati Bengals against Philadelphia. I don't know which game you're going to do when we do our upsets of the week at 10:45, which, by the way, you're 5-1 this year. I'm 4-2-1 so far this year. Isn't that the records? Let's see. I know that you're 5-1.
Whatever. What week are we in? What NFL week is this?
This is week 8.
So I'm 6-1.
You're 6-1.
Yeah, 6-1. Yeah, because we've done this for seven games.
You're 6-1. I'm 4-2-1.
Yeah.
So close losses.
The only loss I have is because the Patriots wide receiver or tight end couldn't get his front of his foot down in the end zone and instead got his heel in first.
Yeah, you're off to a good year. I hope you're betting these. I mean, we are in Kansas, so you can do what you want. I mean, honestly, I think both of us would be making some cash.
Yeah.
On these predictions.
I mean, both have winning records.
We do have winning records, and that's all that matters.
And if we're always betting the underdog, you know, we're getting good odds on them.
It is, and that's an interesting thing. Well, this week was a big week, obviously, because last week we talked about, all right, receivers, which direction are you going to go? I mean, there's people out there, Deontay Johnson. The big news last week, you know, was Cooper Kupp. Maybe the Cooper Kupp coming to Kansas City. That was going to be, you know, a lot of talk. First of all, how is the money going to work out? Because the Chiefs had to restructure Juwan Taylor, which freed up $5.3 million for the Chiefs. So they do have some money to go play around with if they want to make another move, which I don't think they're completely done. But DeAndre Hopkins, and I know nationally people are like, what are the Chiefs doing? They don't have the money to go out and get a Davante Adams. And you have to have a trade partner as well. They're not going to trade him in the division. I know we've seen dumb stuff with, you know, the Bills and the Ravens, you know, helping the Chiefs out. And the Raiders are a dumb team. So naturally you would think, all right, well, the Raiders would move Davante Adams. He didn't want to come to Kansas City. That's fine. DeAndre Hopkins is like the perfect fit, though. You don't want this guy, you know, for next year, 2 years, you don't need that. Who cares? He's over 30 years old. It doesn't matter. One thing about DeAndre Hopkins does is what?
He catches the football.
To be honest with you, DeAndre Hopkins might have the best hands that any receivers ever had in Kansas City. Not kidding. I mean, his hands, 3.6% career drop rate. His 3 years he spent in Arizona, 315 targets. You know how many drops he had? Three. That's 1%. In 2018, he didn't have a single drop. As Matt McMullen pointed out, 69.1% of his career catches have either A, been for a touchdown, or a first down. That's almost a 70% clip, okay? Getting either a first down or a touchdown every catch you have. He's a red zone matchup nightmare for defenses. Can run a lot of those Rashee Rice type of inside type moves. And this is what you need. These are the type of moves that you make. And I remember, you know, Sammy Watkins, when he was with the Chiefs, would get hurt and stuff like this. But when the Chiefs went on that Super Bowl run, Mahomes' first Super Bowl they got, he averaged almost 100 yards a game receiving. He had 96 yards. That's what you need. So I know DeAndre Hopkins coming in right now, and you're saying, what? His play is going to be limited. I mean, they're not going to run him a ton of routes. That's okay. Because what you really need is for him and the postseason. The Chiefs have shown you they can win. It's get to the second season, the only season that matters. When you look at the schedule, I mean, the Chiefs are primed to be 14-3, 15-2. I mean, I know people are talking about being undefeated and stuff like that, but I think the Chiefs would clearly trade playing some backups and getting some well-needed rest towards the end of the year, because the only thing that matters is winning that ring. I understand the draw of being undefeated, and really we can start talking about when they go to Buffalo, if they're able to beat Buffalo on the road, which Buffalo gets up for these regular season games much more than they do the postseason. But that's when you need DeAndre Hopkins, is in the postseason. And nationally, when they look at the deal, the Chiefs aren't looking. They want somebody to help them till February. That's what matters.
Yeah. You know, I'm not ready to start talking undefeated season. Not now. You know, because this, to me, it would be like if you're watching a baseball game and you're in the fourth inning and the guy's got a no-hitter going. It's too early to talk about the no-hitter. So same here with the undefeated season. But to DeAndre Hopkins, you know, the Chiefs, as from an ETA standpoint, which is just an advanced metric that tells you how efficient your offense is, the Chiefs are a very efficient offense, and it's because they're able to run the ball 3-4 yards, 5 yards.
Yeah, they're number two
clip.
In running efficiency in the NFL, even though they're limited in runs over 11 yards.
Right.
One.
They are not getting explosive plays, but they're being very efficient and continuing to get the old stay ahead of the change thing, right? That's what they're able to do. They're not getting into a lot of fourth or third and longs, second and longs. Patrick Mahomes doesn't take a lot of sacks. So they're able to stay ahead of the chains, and they're very efficient. The problem is that just like you brought up there, is that Kansas City doesn't have explosive plays either. So they're efficient, but if they get behind the sticks, they sort of snowball, right, into, you know, going three and out and ending in a punt, or, you know, maybe getting one first down and punting the ball.
But they do have that ability. I mean, Xavier Worthy, it's a stretch to
but
field.
But now
back.
With DeAndre
and Justin
Hopkins.
Watson at times, you know, here and there. And DeAndre Hopkins, you know, making those, keeping the chains moving, man.
Yes,
that third and seven, catching the football instead of bringing out Matt Araiza to punt the football, or the ball bouncing in on your hands. And I know people were enamored with Juju a few weeks ago when he had 7 for 130. He was left wide open, right? The Saints did not even give him nearly the respect. And, of course, he had that big drop that went straight in the hands of Colin Saunders. You can't have that stuff, man. That ended up being a 13-point swing. Like, I don't care about 130 yards receiving if you have the ball bounce out of your hands into somebody, and the Saints ended up going down and scoring a touchdown there. They missed the extra point, 13-point swing. Just catch the football. There's nothing that drives me more than nuts more than them dropping the ball.
And with DeAndre, what the Chiefs really need right now is they need a guy to catch the ball between 5 and 12 yards, 5 and 15 yards. That sort of, you know, medium gains that can help Kansas City stay in front of the chains. And if you do get in a second and long, can you either pick up the first down or get in the good old-fashioned third manageable? And that's what Kansas City's offense is really missing right now. And on top of that, how many times have we talked about Kansas City settling for field goals when the offense has been cruising for 75 yards, they get within first and goal, and they aren't able to punch the ball in? DeAndre Hopkins is going to help with that. Like you just said, he is very good about either getting first downs or touchdowns, and that's exactly what Kansas City's offense needs. I thought that's why that this was such a good move by Kansas City, because you had a problem and you found a guy for a really good deal to be able to come in and solve that problem. He's not the DeAndre Hopkins of, you know, 2019, but he is still a damn good wide receiver, and that's what Kansas City needed.
He doesn't have to be. That's the question.
Exactly.
And as far as the Raiders are concerned, all right, yeah, defensively, they're limited, especially in points per game. They're not good. But they're good against the pass. They're 8th against the pass this year, and they're also number 2 in third down efficiency on defense. I mean, that's, you know, kind of when you look in the numbers where the Raiders are good. And obviously, Brock Bowers, it's the closest thing to Travis Kelce that's been coming out of the draft in the longest time. This dude's on pace to have the most catches ever for tight end. He's number two in the NFL in yardage and catches, and that's at a tight end. And the Chiefs struggled against a tight end. So that's something they have. And Max Crosby on defense has always been a problem. And listen, the Raiders are not a good team, but they did go into Baltimore and beat the Ravens. So it can happen. And you can't take a team like that lightly.
No, you can't take them lightly. And, you know, the thing is that the Raiders' secondary is just so bad that I think that can help you limit their pass rush. And being able to, you know, Patrick Mahomes is so good at being able to get the ball out quick. And so by doing that, I know Kansas City's tackles have struggled this year. So hopefully, you know, that's sort of the... that's sort of the idea going into the game. I will say this, is that something was really weird earlier in the week. Max Crosby did not practice on Thursday with an ankle injury, but he was a full participant on Friday and Wednesday.
That's the way it's been going with him. He'll play.
Yeah, I know.
100% he'll play.
It's just,
and they're not trading him either.
No. No, you need something
to
build around.
Yeah, they're going to keep him. I'm sure Tom Brady is fine with Devontae Adams going, but you don't want to get rid of him. Because now he's part of that ownership group, so I'm sure that he'll be part of decisions going forward. But yes, the Raiders are good on third down efficiency. They yield third downs just 28.9% of the time. That's what they've been doing, but they've been very good, you know, against the pass. Eighth in the NFL against the pass. And again, not a great team, but they did win in Baltimore. The, quote, flavor of the week in the NFL, everybody loves them, which I think is funny. Their defense much better last year, 100% better last year with Mike McDonald than it is this year. They're 32nd in the NFL against the pass, the Raiders. 14 yards a game worse than the Jaguars. That's how bad they are. They're 25th in the NFL in points against. They're good at stopping the run. I'll give them that.
They have think of where they invested.
But they're horrible against the pass. And not only that, the Chiefs haven't given up 30 points in 2 years. Baltimore's done it two of the last 3 weeks. So the two word, 2 years for the Chiefs, two of the last 3 weeks for the Ravens.
I mean, if you think about, you know, where the Raiders have spent their free agent money, and it's been at that defensive line position, right? DN, defensive interior, right? Because they realize if they're going to try and beat Mahomes, you know, the good old, what do they call them? The Michael Jordan rules, right? They're just going to go and try and beat the hell out of the other quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. But they forgot that there are seven other positions on defense that you need guys to play.
Yeah, 100%. Coming up next, though, DeAndre Hopkins did speak earlier this week. What do they expect of DeAndre himself? What he said, by the way, James Palmer put out to expect DeAndre Hopkins to play today and actually play a good amount. A few factors played into this. Hop's football IQ, the Chiefs, the work they put in on Hopkins during free agency before 2023, and especially wide receiver coach Connor Embry, who got Hopkins up to speed. Again, he's been playing for 12 years. He's been an all-pro. Not just Pro Bowl, but all-pro. He knows what he's doing. He's got 79 touchdown catches in his career. By the way, Andre Johnson's going to the Hall of Fame this year, had 70. So I think D-Hop, not only that, he's got to catch every single football game he's ever played, 168. He's got an active streak of 168. That was the only guy that's got a longer active streak catching than Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce's 164, 164 straight games with the catch. So they have number one and number two active streaks in the NFL now with DeAndre Hopkins and Travis Kelce. And Kelce did have that streak, remember, of 114 straight games of at least three catches that ended against Cincinnati, but he still got a catch. So they have number one and two active streaks in catches in the National Football League. So good stuff ahead for the Chiefs. But hear from DeAndre Hopkins, Andy Reid, what he expects from him in the game today. But, you know.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Expect him to play quite a bit today. And welcome back, Jay Binkley, Quentin Morris. Saw Quentin hoped to sell on Friday night. Fans football show was a good time. Don't forget, we'll be out. Mitch Schwartz and I will be out in Lee Summit. Lee Summit out on Chipman Road to the Buffalo Wild Wings there. And something I didn't know, I love Mountain Dew a lot. I didn't realize that Buffalo Wild Wings is a special Mountain Dew made just for Buffalo Wild Wings. So absolutely love that. I'll be wired up on Mountain Dew, as I am already now, later today with the Chiefs and Raiders game. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. 913-586-7965. Same as Jay's Southland Tow Service text line. 913-586-7965. Dan in KCK. What's up, Dan?
Good morning, Bink. How you doing? I think the Chiefs will hammer the Raiders today. Well,
that's right, Dan.
Deal on the Christmas Day loss. You know, well, who was the Raiders player that did that in the preseason? Oh,
in which preseason? Oh, the Trey Taylor, the Buffett?
Yeah, the puppet deal. Who did that, Bink?
It was Trey Taylor, a seventh-round pick for the Raiders. I will say this. That was uncharacteristic of him. I think he got caught up at the moment in training camp. But clearly, you know, stuff like that is great for the Kansas City Chiefs going forward, because any kind of motivation they can have is great. Because a lot of times you have to search for that motivation when you're a great football team and you don't know. Trey Taylor, it is weird to say. I mean, because, again, it's uncharacteristic. The guy's an Air Force Academy grad. All right, he was drafted out of the Air Force Academy. He's going to be a pilot in the United States military. And so it's very uncharacteristic. He's taking advantage of that loophole, which is he can play in the NFL now and then do his service time later, where now the rule has been switched. He was grandfathered in, which you have to do 2 years in the military before playing in pro football. But, yeah, it was uncharacteristic because of kind of the character that he actually is.
Yeah, I've been getting all me and Dan, my other roommate, we'll be going to that Buccaneers game in 2 weeks. Yeah, Dan's got tickets from the Special Olympics.
Nice. You going to that Monday night football game, the one without Chris Godwin? Yep. Oh, man, it's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yep.
Well, you have a great time out there, Dan.
What do you think about it? The Dodgers are doing pretty good, or the Yankees. And what did you think about Aaron Boone's decision in game one going with Cortez?
First of all, you know, Freddie Freeman does really well with the bases loaded against what and he still pitched him, and he walked to get the Freddie Freeman, and Freddie Freeman made him pay, but walk-off grand slams are just, those are epic. And now the Yankees find themselves in a 2-0 hole. But Ohtani's hurt. We'll see if Ohtani, you know, gets back for the Yankees game. But that's definitely a concern. Thanks a lot, Dan. Enjoy the game today. Much appreciated. Steven in KC. What's up, Steven?
Oh, Bank, man. These are the days we live for, man. It's that day. That was my, after the Kermit stunt in training camp, that was my one of my favorite retorts to a incident ever. Say, we're going to take care of this when the time comes. Well, today is when the time comes.
Yeah, today's when you cast that check.
When little brother gets smacked down like a peon, man. I can't wait. I can't wait for this, and especially with D-Hop back. Those 50-50 balls now become 70-30 or 80-20. You watch. You throw to this guy, he's got six times the normal fingers like Arnold Palmer. He's the Arnold Palmer of NFL wide receivers, man. This is gonna be fun today. Just beat the living crap out of him.
What's your prediction today? Because the Chiefs do keep games relatively close, even though I think they put their two best complete games the last 2 weeks. Even though the score doesn't always indicative of that, but the Chiefs dominated physically the last two games for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that, you know, the Chiefs have definitely looked better. It's just unfortunate that the score doesn't reflect that. I do think that, you know, this game is one of those games that Kansas City just looks dominant from the beginning. I imagine that, you know, this is the NFL. Teams don't get shut out. So I do think that they're able to get a couple field goals and maybe a touchdown, but I don't think the score is really that close once we take a final look at the scoreboard.
I don't think so. The Trey Taylor thing, I'm sure they'll use that in the Kermit. And here's the one thing about it. When seventh-round picks do this, you know what happens is, and what you need to happen, have guys like Max Crosby, you know, inside the locker room. Dude, come on, man. You don't need to give Mahomes any more extra motivation because he lives by that stuff. And he'll make you remember. I remember counting to where he's drafted against the Bears. It's the Nick Saban used to call it rat poison. Like it's always good to have somebody say something negative against you. I'll never forget the 15 Royals, right? Everybody was loving them up because they were so good in 14. They were the darling of the league. And in 15, there was hardly anything written bad about him in the preseason, but they found that one writer that put the Royals like near the bottom of the division. I'm never going to forget Christian Colon coming on talking about how the Royals, you know, use that for motivation because everybody's telling you how good you are. The one thing about the Chiefs is anytime they just hop on social media or NFL Network or whatever, you have people doubting him. You'll have people giving praise again to those Baltimore Ravens with the 32nd worst pass defense in the NFL out of 32 teams, the flavor of the weeks. When the Chiefs are undefeated, that's a big deal. And they beat Baltimore. You know, they've beaten them. They've beaten Baltimore. They've beaten Cincinnati. They went on the road and beat the 49ers. I know they had injuries, so the Chiefs. Big deal. That's what happens.
Yeah, it's the thing is that there are this. I think the reason is that the Chiefs don't just look like they used to, right? And I think that's really the big thing is that if Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have looked similar to like this in the past, like if he didn't come out with his 5,000 yards and 50 touchdown season, and Patrick Mahomes, you know, for most of his career was just an efficient quarterback, and the Chiefs had played through their defense, I think the conversation would be the same. But it, not just Chiefs fans, but nationally, you know, they're striving and they're looking to be like, man, you know, he should be better. He's playing so bad. You know, those are the conversations that are happening when, you know, those things come out. And then you look at a team like the Lions or Baltimore who have blown teams out, who have just looked totally dominant on both sides of the ball. Those are the teams that people are going to start talking about and talking about how they're better than X team because they had one game where they just looked totally unstoppable.
Yeah, no question about it. But the whole thing with the Trey Taylor thing is, I mean, the guy did win the Jim Thorpe Award. And again, we're talking about a future pilot in the United States military. So I think that was kind of uncharacteristic for him to do, to be quite honest with you. So we'll see what happens. Didn't get to the Chiefs and as far as what DeAndre Hopkins said about playing time today and Andy Reid. But according to James Palmer, looks like you're going to see him out there playing quite a bit. And again, he knows the route tree. He knows what to do, and he can catch the football. Enormous hands that DeAndre Hopkins has. So we'll hear from him next. And welcome back. Jay Binkley, Quint Morris. You have fun on the Fans Football Show the other night, Quint? We get a little geeky on that, man. In a good way. In a good way. 100%. It's always great to hear Mitch's, you know, thought. Mitch Schwartz, you know, he was in there when they, do we have time? They were on Wasp. Like they have a guy that was in the huddle when they had a chance to do one of those catches. But this week, DeAndre Hopkins talked to the media in Kansas City. He was all about business, man. He was all about business 100%. He stood on business, and I love that. But here was his thought about the importance of playing for a Super Bowl team like the Chiefs.
Very important. I think I've done a lot, all the accolades that I can accomplish as far as personal. So I think, you know, just playing meaningful football in January is, you know, what's left on the list.
That's what's left on the list. Borderline Hall of Fame career, it's the only thing he's got is to win that ring. Here was D-Hop's thoughts on playing with Pat.
Always been a fan of Pat. Stayed in touch with him throughout his career. So, you know, excited to go get started.
So there's DeAndre Hopkins meeting with the media on that. Here's Andy Reid, who's, you know, he couldn't speak because it wasn't officially done until he talked later on this week, but he talked about what D-Hop brings to the Chiefs.
Well, I think not necessarily lacking, but he's a veteran player and seen just about everything over 12 years. So and he's a good space player. So he's very good understanding how to work in space. At the same time, he's a tough matchup because of his size, arm length, you know, big body that knows how to kind of play that low post area very well.
And he catches everything, and that's the question. James Palmer read you the tweet. They expect a lot of DeAndre Hopkins today. Here's Andy Reid, and I love his comment. Is D-Hop going to play today?
Well, it could be this weekend. Yeah, we'll see how he picks up. I've got to get him on the practice field. But, right, you know, why wait, right, if he can handle it without putting him in a bad position?
Why wait? I mean, you got the toy? Yeah, I mean, you use them. You use what you have available, and the Chiefs have been, you know, hurting in the wide receiver department. If Hollywood Brown does make himself back this year, can you imagine D-Hop? I mean, I would have loved to seen, you know, Forrest. I'd love to see Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy and DeAndre Hopkins and Hollywood Brown. I mean, that, in a perfect world, I'd love to see it. But We have seen a ton of wide receiver injuries in the NFL this year.
We've seen a lot of just injuries and to big names in general. But
yeah, and by the way, T. Higgins, as I mentioned earlier, inactive today for the Bengals, speaking of good wide receivers.
This might go down as one of the bigger what-if, you know, offensive years in Mahomes' career, right? Because, you know, heading into that, we were all – when Hollywood Brown got signed, we knew that Rice had improved himself from last year. After they drafted Worthy, all of us, for months, we were looking at this team and we were like, man, you know, Patrick Mahomes is talking about how he wants to have fun and he wants to go throw the ball deep down again. And it's just like, yes, this is what we want. This is what we're excited for. And then it has just slowly fallen apart over the first couple months of the season. So we're making adjustments. You brought in a guy that, you know, everybody should be excited about. And this will be the first chance we get to see DeAndre Hopkins.
Per Diana Russini on Twitter, DeAndre Hopkins begins as Chiefs shifter today. One AFC head coach said is essentially the wide receiver version of Kelsey as far as being a route runner. May not always look like he does it on the diagram, but he finds a way to get open and make the catch. And that's the one thing. That's going to be something that keeps building throughout the year, you know. Like the Kelsey, the improvised routes that he runs, just finds a way to get open, and Mahomes finds him. I expect a lot with DeAndre Hopkins, but this is why I think this is Andy Reid's best year coaching. And clearly last year, when you think about beating 1-3-4, scoring defenses in the postseason on the road or a neutral facility, was awesome for the Chiefs. But Andy Reid went to training camp with a completely different offense that he ended up with in the regular season. I mean, you're out there with, you know, the speed on both sides, Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown, and you got Rashee Rice to eat up the middle, and then all of a sudden you're forced in the situation. You're going into game with a rookie, Justin Watson. You're running 14 personnel by having Jody Fortson active on game days to be able to run four tight ends. The ground and pound, we've seen almost as many inside zone runs for the Chiefs this year between the, you know, behind the center, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and Joe Tooney. Then we saw last year, the inside zone run's been prevalent in this Chiefs offense. They've run almost, they ran it 59 times a season ago, and they're nearly to that limit now. Going forward, they've taken advantage of the inside zone run, the ground and pound. Seemingly, they have their answer now on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1, and it's good to see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kareem Hunt, when he was brought back, I had very low expectations of what he was going to be able to do. And I thought that, you know, Carson Steele was probably going to be the guy. And then Kareem Hunt was more of a backup plan. But he has proved me as wrong as you possibly could have proved me wrong. He's still got a lot of tread on the tires. He's still a physical runner. And he is not afraid to bulldoze people over, you know, 300-pound linemen trying to tackle him. And he can just carry him.
He's been a breath of fresh air. And
he
again,
truly,
you know,
has.
Here was a guy that was on the couch, like Juju was. They come in here and help this football team. I mean, it's been unbelievable what Andy Reid's been able to do and this coaching staff's been able to do with their talent moving forward. It's why I think it's Andy Reid's best year, because it's your ability to adapt. It's your ability to overcome. And that's what the Chiefs had to do. And you hear nationally, you know, when people talk about the Chiefs and you buying into them or not, well, they're 6-0. And being undefeated in the NFL is a tough thing to do. Ask the Vikings, who have lost back-to-back games now that were the flavor of the week in the National Football League. Everybody in this whole league has at least two losses except for the Lions. Lions, Chiefs, the only ones. Lions have one blemish. Chiefs have none. Everybody else, two losses so far. Really quick, let's go to the phone lines before we have Drew Nixon talking college football coming up here at 11. Have to go to my man Big T and Shawnee. What's up, Big T?
Hey, man, thanks for taking my call, Bink. Man, it's Breakfast with Bink, man. You're one of my favorites, Bink. So to honor you, I did biscuits and gravy and keep with the beef theme. Ooh. I did Eggs Benedict, too, Bink.
Did you grab a straw and drink that gravy when you're done?
Oh, man, you got it. You know it, Bink.
Thanks,
you know it.
Big T.
This time of year, we're big guys. We love this time of year. And then keep with the beef theme, beat down on the Raiders. But I want to talk about the World Series a little bit. I thoroughly enjoyed watching the Dodgers just beat the pond scum Yankees. I hate the Yankees. I've always loathed them. I'm not much of a Dodgers fan either, but, you know, pick your poison.
But why was Aaron Boone blocking to get to Freddie Freeman, who's got four home runs and a .640 batting average against lefties? I mean,
he's
that left out of the analytics? Come on.
Yeah, Boone's a crybaby. It's always nice to see him mess up like that. And it's I thoroughly like watching the Yankees suffer. You know, they're too underachieved. You know, they've underachieved those big markets, big money. It's about time they finally did something. But I thoroughly enjoyed the K-State KU game yesterday. That was fun to listen to on 610. Everybody, I loved it. I listen to 610 still because you get the feed faster.
Because you're old school. But,
yeah, old school.
We're still there, the Fan, 610 a.m., so take advantage of it, Big T.
I love it, man.
You're going old school.
I am. And then, you know, finally, the Chiefs, man, you're right. Big Red, we're in good hands. And I'm just wondering today, it's really got to grind the Raiders' gear when we're going to hear home of the Chiefs in their stadium. They're a bunch of punk asses. I've said it before. I'll say it again. They will always reside at the intersection of Loser Street and Suck-Ass Avenue. Pat Mahomes, he's a badass mofo. He'll be fine. Our running game's pounding. That interior line is a weapon. We should utilize that. I'm glad they're doing it. Keep pounding the rock. Let's get some touchdowns today, Travis Kelce. And as always, let's go Chiefs.
Choo-choo! Yeah, I mean, Dodgers and Yankees, I mean, seriously, it's a little bit like kissing your cousin or your sister. You know what I'm saying? They're big market teams. I mean, honestly, both of them can lose, and I wouldn't give a damn. But obviously, somebody's got to win. But you know, it's hard for me to root for big payroll teams. But I never like to see the Yankees win. That's for sure on that thing. By the way, all these walk-ins are starting to happen in the NFL. Everybody's dressing in their costumes. This is the big weekend for people to, you know, everybody dresses fancy, you know, and stuff to do their walk into the stadium. Everybody's wearing their costumes now, which you and I did not do today, which I appreciate. Anyway, coming up next, we'll talk college football. Drew Nixon, the executive producer of Coding Gold, joins us each and every week at 11 o'clock. We'll dive into college football next.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
And welcome back, Jay Binkley, Quentin Morris. Normally I have Drew Nixon on, but we're having trouble reaching Drew Nixon this morning. So it's our college football segment, so we'll just dive into it myself, which is just fine with me. By the way, did you see this tweet? I know people are talking about this. Michael Girdley, right, on Twitter. He's a businessman. He's been in Kansas City, he said, for he's been here for the last month, he said. And he was talking about things he noticed about Kansas City people. He says, everyone is super nice, almost to the point of feeling off. Nobody has a favorite barbecue place. Everybody likes something here, something there. That's true. And everybody always wears something Kansas City. The amount of people wearing the Kansas City, like those heart shirts with Kansas City or Chiefs or Royals or something, people are proud of where they're from. They're proud of Kansas City, but that is 100% true when it comes to barbecue places. Because people in this town, you either like the beans somewhere, you like the brisket somewhere, you like the burnt ends. Not many people have just that one favorite barbecue restaurant. They like, you know, so many different dishes from different ones. And I completely get that because that's how I am. I don't know how you are, Quentin, but certainly I like, you know, I like the ribs better one place, the burnt ends better one place. I mean, the brisket better one place. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, each place has their own different thing. Each one has, like, you like the side here better, or you like the brisket here better. You're absolutely right. That's how this works. That's why there are so many, and so many are successful, is because each one has sort of their own signature thing.
I remember, you know, when the Masters has the previous champion gets to select the dinner, right, for the night before. Or the night before the Masters, and they get together and they can pick whatever they want on the menu. I always thought, man, like that's what I would do. I would bring in an all-star,
just some barbecue,
an all-star lineup. I'm not kidding, man. It's the way to go. And if you and your friends get together and want to really do it right, you know, send somebody over to get the brisket. Just have the all-star meal, the all-star barbecue meal. That's the way to do it, man. That is the way to do it. Just send, you know, get three or four of your buddies. You're getting together, having barbecue. Everybody go out and get something different and make this all-star plate of food. That's the way to do it in this town.
I kind of did that earlier this year. I talked about how I went to Omaha and watched a Storm Chasers game. But it was me, a family. There was like a dozen of us.
There's a lot of good places to eat and drink in Omaha, by the way.
Yeah, we went up and we all pitched in and we got the dugout suite. at the Omaha Storm Chasers game, and we got their what they called their Kansas City barbecue plate. And I was skeptical, you know. I was like, okay, you call it that, but is it really that? But we all decided that that's what we wanted to do. And it was very good. So I was very happy to have that. I never had corn nuggets before. So those are awesome. They're like, they're just little like fried balls of corn. It was delicious.
Smokehouse, I've always liked Smokehouse. And the thing I know they sponsor that football and barbecue podcast that did. Obviously, you know, Bob does a lot of stuff with them as well. But honestly, I've been eating them for 30 years. I've been eating Smokehouse for like 30 years. I like it. I found the place I really like out in Eudora, Kansas, called Barbed Wire Barbecue. Hey, this guy used to sell it to the two brothers that run it, Jay and Jason. They sell barbecue out of their dad's garage. Then they got a food truck. And then they, you know, bought a brick-and-mortar restaurant, which they have now. It's like the American dream, just these steps. And they, you know, they redesigned this whole building themselves and put all their sweat equity in it. That's the American dream, man, what they do. But I love that barbecue place
now,
too. I love
food trucks. Food trucks are underrated, man.
Very underrated.
I've never had a bad experience at a food truck, and I've probably had, like, five or six in my life now. There's a place up in Maryville. It's called Sergeant Grill. And he has I had a barbecue sandwich out of there one time. Phenomenal. Fantastic. Literally on Friday, I was downtown and there's a taco truck that sits in a parking lot all the time. And I was like, I'd never been there before. I was hungry. So I went and got a couple of tacos. Delicious. They're phenomenal. So, yeah, food trucks are where it's at.
You went to Northwest Missouri State. I'm a Pitt State guy. But I have been to Pauly Ice Pizza up in Maryville. And that's fantastic. Did you ever spend much time there? But that place was, I don't know if they still have their buffet. They used to have a pizza buffet up there, but I don't know if COVID killed all that stuff. But that place was really good.
The place that died while I was up there during COVID was a sports bar called Carson's. And best jalapeno poppers I've ever had, because they were not, like, they weren't full jalapenos. It was jalapeno cream cheese that was then fried. So they were like puffs of jalapeno poppers. They were phenomenal, and I will never get them again, and that makes me upset.
But I always liked that. Hey, speaking of Pittsburgh State, did you see what they did yesterday? The only undefeated team in the MIAA, University of Central Oklahoma, Pittsburgh State goes down to Edmond, Oklahoma, and beats them, and Pittsburgh State sits atop the MIAA standings. There's three teams with one loss, obviously USO or UCO, Emporia State, that they actually did beat Pittsburgh earlier this year, but Pitt State has six wins in the MIAA, and they're ranked sixth in the country. Tremendous win for Pittsburgh State. And I know you don't want to hear that. But,
no, I don't.
But I had to give some gorillas some love there. Speaking of the gorillas, are you watching what Vanderbilt's doing right now?
Yeah.
I mean, just kind of the resurgence they've had. It's an interesting story. They lose to Texas by three. But even in a loss, had they beat Texas, which Texas got all they wanted to, and then welcome to the SEC, because that's what happens. Teams like Vanderbilt step up, and they can and will beat you. And the SEC is a tough thing. Ask Oklahoma how plain the SEC is. Texas almost found out by losing to Vanderbilt. But they had all those transfers. Those 13 transfers come in from New Mexico State. Their head coach, Jerry Kill, is on that staff now at Vanderbilt. Former Pitt State guy. He was a Pitt State, believe it or not, Jerry Kill was a Pitt State defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator when he was down in Pittsburgh. And one of the guys he coached, Tim Beck, who's defensive back then, former head coach of the Gorillas, won a national title with them. He's the offensive coordinator for Vanderbilt. So a real Pittsburgh State feel for the Vanderbilt Commodores in their turnaround. Let's not forget, Jerry Kill, when he was at New Mexico State, went to Auburn last year and won 31-10. In the SEC, he took New Mexico State down there and won.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma, Texas, maybe not so much Texas, but you know, when you move up to the SEC, you know, there are no divisions. You have to basically be, you know, undefeated or one loss. You can't have a slip up, right? If you want to be on top of the SEC, because it is so packed with just top teams. Missouri has found out the hard way, you know, ever since they've been in the SEC. And it's not just, you know, the stereotype is like, oh, it's Alabama and they will know. It's even when Alabama's on a down year, you know, they only have two losses. You've got these powerhouse teams, but it's just not just one. Where if you look at some of the other conferences around, you know, college football, Big 12, Big 10, right? You've only got a couple of teams you got to worry about. The entire SEC, you got to worry about it.
I 100% do, but it's got that Pitt State feel to it. By the way, Arkansas scores 58 points. Sam Pittman, the head coach, former player at Pittsburgh State University. So this is all this connection. Willie Fritz down in Houston, head coach, Pittsburgh State guy as well. 913 is asking me about the Pitt State win yesterday. Yes, I've just been that's the delay. That's the delay right there hitting it. But clearly I'm talking about that. 816 that wants to know about the barbecue place by those brothers out. It's Eudora, Barbara Barbecue. It's called Barbara Barbecue in Eudora, Kansas. The place is unbelievable. Enjoy it. Missouri, as we talked about when we opened the show, gets absolutely pounded at Alabama, a very vulnerable Alabama. You watch that game, that first half, Alabama was very vulnerable. Missouri let him in. Drew Pine let him in.
Yes.
Drew Pine, that was one of the worst quarterback appearances I've ever seen when he had to fill in there for Brady Cook. Missouri fans were pining for Pine last week before Brady Cook got hurt. Then they got a dose of what Brady or Drew Pine is and didn't like him so much. He played a lot against Alabama. And he was absolutely terrible. There was absolutely no chance Missouri had in that football game because of the quarterback. And you know what? You have nil now, name, image, and likeness money. And I get it, man. Your starting quarterback goes down. What do you really have? I mean, look at the NFL. But the salary cap. No salary cap in college football with nil money. You can go out and do whatever you want. But the bottom line is, you got to have a backup, man. I mean, even the Chiefs. I know if Mahomes goes down, you're going to say, but Carson Wentz is here. You know, a former guy that was running for an MVP. So at least they have that. But this Drew Pine, 6 of 12, 42 yards and 3 interceptions.
Bad interceptions.
Bad interceptions. Not just like, you know, a tip ball that was, you know, maybe a 50-50 ball. I'm talking right in their hands. Yes. Right in their hands.
It's like he's colorblind. He forgot what team he was playing for.
It was brutal. Of course, K-State gets 16 straight against the University of Kansas. And we talked about it, you know, the fine line between, you know, being Pop-Tart Bowl eligible if they lose that game to being in the college football playoffs. Could have gotten one way or the other. As far as national games are concerned, props to Indiana. Goes to 8-0 with a backup quarterback. Great stuff. They didn't complain. They went out and won a game with a backup quarterback that they hadn't had all year. They go to 8-0. They're the only college football team, first college football team in 20 years to never go 8 weeks into the season without trailing in a game. Unbelievable stuff, what's going on in Indiana. So they win that game. They remain undefeated. BYU remains undefeated. Of course, Iowa State week off. They remain undefeated. Penn State, big game this week against Ohio State. They remain undefeated. A lot of undefeated. Of course, it always kind of works itself out. But these teams that are undefeated have to feel real good about themselves that they have that one loss to play with and maybe still get into the playoffs.
Yeah, the undefeated is as important as ever with the college football playoffs, and that there are going to be some two-loss teams that are going to not make the – Mac was talking about it earlier today, right? Like his Tennessee team, right? He's going to be upset because he feels like there's a chance that Tennessee's not going to be able to make it into the playoffs, and it's not Tennessee's fault. It's more just what else is going around, and that there are going to be some good teams that aren't going to make the college football playoffs, which when – we headed into this new system. You know, last year we had Florida who got knocked out because their quarterback got hurt. There were only four spots. We were like, okay, we've expanded it. There's more spots now. You know, whoever gets left out probably should be left out. But as the season goes on and on, maybe it's not going to end up like that. Maybe there's going to be some teams that you really feel like should have made it and they're not going to make it.
Colorado, another impressive performance. This team is much better than it was last year, especially defensively with Rob Livingston there as defensive coordinator. Warren Sapp's there as a defensive analyst as well. Shedeur Sanders, 25 of 30, 323 and two touchdowns. He was great. Travis Hunter continues to be the best player in college football. Four pass breakups on defense. He had 9 for 153 and two touchdowns catching the football. Jimmy Horn, a big game, 5 for 78. But it is funny because he did throw up the Tyreek Hill peace signs and that touchdown was called back. One thing you don't do, man, score the touchdown, then celebrate after that. Don't do it before there. Know the rules of college football.
Yeah, it's like, when you've got guys that are celebrating, you know, they stick the ball out when they're, you know, on an interception or a fumble or something, and they stick the ball out like they're, trudging into the end zone, and that running back or, you know, the corner comes up behind them and smacks their arm and they fumble it outside the back of the end zone. You know, we've seen that in the NFL before on like kick returns and punt returns, and it's like, just score the touchdown and celebrate later.
Yeah, no question about it. And we've seen that, you know, a lot, the celebrations in college football. Everybody, look at me, look at me, look at me. You know, just win the game. Score a touchdown, win the game. Then worry about celebrating later. You don't have to point the first down every time. We get it. We know it. Because it always comes back to bite you at the end.
It always makes me laugh when, you know, a team's getting blown out and they're down 24 points. It's in the first, it's in
and
the fourth quarter.
And you're pointing to the first down.
Yeah, and you get an 11-yard catch. Oh, congratulations. You got a first down. You're still down by 24 points.
Or the 49ers in the Super Bowl, the first time they played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, you know, posing for the pictures and everything, you know, after getting the interception, which drives me nuts. When guys get an interception and the fumble, I know they allow it now when you run to the other end zone and do it. I mean, do the celebrations and stuff. It's like, come on, man. Win the game and then talk, because I've seen so many times teams do this and then end up losing the game and it looks silly. It does. It looks silly afterwards.
That's the risk you take by doing early celebrations.
That's right. That's right. I hope Drew's okay. We didn't get the chance to talk to Drew Nixon. Hopefully he's doing all right. But we have the burning question each and every week. Sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's Quentin. We put together something to debate. We've got a good one this week. We'll do that next. Chiefs pregame with Art Haynes, Dan Israel. We'll check in with the guys, Mitch Holtis and Dan and Hughes, Josh Klingler. Excited for the Chiefs and the Raiders coming up 325 right here, 96.5 The Fan. You can hear the pregame show, plus you can hear the Chiefs and Raiders. Don't have to go anywhere. Just keep your dial 96.5. Or if you're like Big T and Shawnee and you refuse to go to FM, we still got you, The Fan, 610 a.m. So we're both AM, FM dial, your phone, Odyssey app, whatever you want, Quentin. We got you covered, man. But, you know, if you're in your car, yeah, just might flip it on 96.5 The Fan. You'll notice a little bit of difference in just the way it sounds.
Those crisp FM wavelengths.
That's right. That's right. And the, I get it, though, man. But AM radio is sometimes hard to find, man. I mean, it's almost impossible if you go try to find an AM radio. It was hard to always find one when I, you know, mow the lawn and stuff. You look for one because I like to listen to Denny Matthews or something if I'm mowing a Saturday afternoon and the Royals are playing or whatever. It is tough to find an AM radio, man. You almost have to go to old school and try to find that old Walkman. I mean, it is not easy finding an AM radio. And I didn't like having the phone and the app. I didn't like to, you know, bring the phone out when you're mowing the lawn and stuff like that. Leave it all. By the way, Drew is fine. I think Drew was either A, in the bathroom, or B, playing video games would be my guess, but he's fine.
Well, he's not Kyler Murray.
I know the text line was worried about him, and I even saw on Twitter people worried about Drew Nix. I was even concerned because, like, where the hell is he? You know, Drew Nix is like he's like Maytag, man. He's dependable, and then he's not there, and it's like, you know, what the hell is Drew doing? But I'm pretty sure he was stuck on the toilet, but we'll talk to him at 11:30. All right, Quentin, it's time now for our burning question. Things like you can have any back in the history of the NFL for 1 yard for touchdown. Who you picking? We did that one. We've done what would you want in your house? Like Devontae Adams had the Taco Bell fictitiously on those commercials. What restaurant would you have? Where are we going today with the burning question?
I actually wanted to do more of a Chiefs-related one just because I had this question and I wanted to fit it into the show somewhere. So who is more important to the Chiefs? Is it Trey Smith, or is it Nick Bolton?
It's a good one because you can make an argument for it. All right, let's look at Trey Smith. He's just physically dominating what he's doing. He also is, you know, a protector of Patrick Mahomes, what he does when he gets out in space, when they pull him. But the Chiefs have been relying so heavily on the inside zone runs. It's been a big part of their physicality. But Nick Bolton, on the other hand, you're looking at a guy that helped you win a game when you were Atlanta, when he stuck through there and drilled Bijan Robinson to stop him on fourth down. He does lead the Chiefs in tackles. I know earlier this season he looked bad in coverage. There was one, you know, a game where he had the bad, but he hadn't looked that bad since. Because the defense is so good and so solid this year, I'm going to go Trey Smith and what he's having to do, especially, you know, with that inside zone and how dominant that offensive line has looked. And physical, this offensive line has looked. I'm going to go Trey Smith.
Yeah, I think it's really tough to go with Nick Bolton. And I think it's just because of how poor the passing game has been that you've been able to run the ball in between. You know, guard, center, guard has been the strength of this team. But I think it shows you how dependent the Chiefs are on the run game. And as on the defensive side, Nick Bolton, you know, I don't think that he's a quote-unquote replaceable player. by any means, but because your defense is so strong, that I think if you...
But he has been in the past, though, because he was last year. I mean, Drew Tranquil put that green dot on, you really didn't recognize it.
Yeah,
what happened?
It really. I think this... I wanted to bring this up, one, because I think it shows sort of the strengths of this team, but also, two, we're going to have some big questions in the offseason about, you know, where money gets allocated this offseason. You know,
I would push it towards Trey Smith.
Yeah.
That's honestly, I know they've got a lot wrapped up in their offensive line as far as money's concerned, but I do feel like the linebacker position can be expendable at times. And I think you'd really notice if Trey Smith wasn't playing.
And like I mean, you know, they already have tackle problems. I can't imagine if three of your five offensive line pieces were playing below average football. I mean, that would just be... I mean, you'll start talking close to catastrophe level if that were to start to happen. You know, you've got Patrick Mahomes is safe, safe from the middle of the line. It's the outside, but, you know, you can help. You can get like what Mitchell Schwartz called on Friday, either the bad chips or the good chips.
Yeah.
You know, chips from the tight end, those are good. Chips from the running backs, those are bad. So, you know, you can help there. Not a lot of help you can do if your guard is bad.
Trey Smith sets that tempo, man. I mean, He's the nastiest dude on that offensive line. I mean, he is the nastiest punisher this team has, and your protector of Patrick Mahomes, instrumental in this running game that's keeping the Chiefs, you know, alive, second most efficient running game in the National Football League. They've run the ball 47% of the time, which is far higher than what Andy Reid has done ever when he's been in Kansas City. So I'm going to go Trey Smith. Coming up next, Drew Nixon's off the toilet. We'll talk college football next.
He hates the Chiefs.
The first time ever, Mahomes goes 9-8.
He's delusional about his Bengals.
Joe Burrow's going to get the job done again because he's going to be healthy. And they're going to win, and they're going to go to New Orleans and be in the Super Bowl.
But he knows everything about college football. Here's the host of the 249 Miles of College Football podcast, Drew Nixon.
You know what? I couldn't wait to talk to Drew at 11 o'clock about college football, man. Drew Nixon's like the Maytag of appliances. You can always count on him. And we were concerned about him. He wasn't there. Tried to call him, tried to text him. Text line's worried about him. Twitter's worried about him. Everybody's worried about Drew Nixon. We found out that he's okay. But Drew still pissed me off today. What's up, Drew?
How's it going? I'm thankful that you guys are so worried about me. I promise
you
don't have to be as worried about me as you are, but I am okay.
Well,
I'm good.
You're so consistent, Drew. You're so dependable, man. Like, you don't drop passes.
Yeah, thank you. Today is the first drop pass that I've had, so hopefully there's no more after this one. Sorry.
Yeah, we said you're either A, on the toilet, or B, playing video games.
I was actually neither of those. I just wasn't by my phone and totally lost track of time.
Yeah.
And, I was not focused. I promised you'd be a better coach. This one's on me.
That surprises me, a guy your age not being by your phone. It's pretty much cemented in your hands when you're in your 20s, right?
I was surprising myself, actually, because I realized I haven't been by my phone in a while, and I checked my phone, and I was like, holy crap, I totally missed the segment with Vink. So here we are. Thank you very much for having me.
It's fine. I love having you on. Love talking college football with you, that's for sure. Oh, by the way, T. Higgins, what, he's not playing today for the Bengals, right? And then,
so we'll get that'll be interesting to see how Jamar Chase holds up all by himself out there, it seems like.
I assume start Jamar Chase in all your fantasy leagues because he's going to eat today without him playing. But college football is where we'll start, Drew, as we always do. We talk about the local teams. Missouri, wow. I mean, what happened to him at A&M? You're like, okay, you know, that's a straight, you know, just get out of your system. But it's been building, man. They just haven't looked consistent offensively. They haven't used Luther Burden. I mean, they have the second best receiver, in my opinion, in the college football. They don't use him correctly. You got to have a backup. Drew Pine, who played a bit when Brady Cook was going to the hospital for the MRI last week, he had to come in for Brady Cook in this game with 6 of 12, 45 yards, and 3 of the worst interceptions you'll ever see. That was an embarrassing performance for Missouri, but it's also embarrassing for the head coach, Eli Drinkwitz, that's your backup quarterback.
No, I think that you bring up a good point there, because if you're a team that's not you know, you don't want to rely all upon your guy, where, I mean, if Cam Ward were to go down, who knows who Miami has exactly as their backup, but when you look at how Drew Pine played a guy that's won football games before, a guy that has been solid going back to his time in Notre Dame, Arizona State, he played as well. He just isn't cut out for the SEC, and it was evident yesterday. Unfortunately, the defense, I thought, played really well for the first quarter and a half. But
they were 10th in the nation in points against. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can only hold on for so long, and defense was not getting any help, and eventually that dam broke, and they're up down 13-0 at halftime when Drew Pine was coming in. I thought they should have tried anything else, but they brought Drew Pine right back out of halftime, and we got the same thing that we saw in the first half. So I think some of this does fall on Drinkwitz and how you manage the situation where they had to throw the kitchen sink at this game, even if it was with the backup, and the backup wasn't working, so they had to try something different, and they didn't. As a result, another really bad loss, and their playoff hopes are now unfortunately done.
Well, and the one thing is, and they knew going into it, Sam Horn, that's the former four-star quarterback in high school, plays baseball and football for Missouri, 6'4", 221, big quarterback, but he underwent Tommy John, so they knew he was gone for the year. But just having a journeyman like Drew Pine that was at Notre Dame, then had a rough time last year at Arizona State, as your quarterback going forward. All right, shift gears to the Big 12. Sunflower Showdown, Kansas State beats Kansas for the 16th straight time. Very scary if you're a Kansas State fan, like my guy Quentin is here producing the operation. They were dancing the fine line, in my opinion, between being Pop-Tarts Bowl bound or college football playoff bound within a few minutes.
I thought the game was really good, and one of the things going in that I said on the podcast, I said on After Hours with Mac too on Wednesday, was Kansas, for their motto for the rest of the season should be the bad guy, ruin people's seasons, and you pile that on top of the fact that they have a rivalry game, and it's a Sunflower Showdown, and they've lost 15 straight times. They've been in every single game that they've lost. I knew that the game would be close. I just felt like the game would be close. I thought Kansas State would win. I thought Jalen Daniels played really well. You're right, though, where teams screw around a little bit, the ranked teams screw around a little bit, and all of a sudden that other team gets a little bit of life. We've seen it sometimes with Auburn against Alabama. Alabama's been able to come on top. K-State were able to come on top real quick, Bank. I saw this on Twitter. I had to bring it up regarding the K-State or the AU situation. The ESPN win probability for the six losses. They had 80% against Illinois, 90% against UNLV, 91% against West Virginia, 76% against TCU, 74% against Arizona State. They had a 76% win probability yesterday against K-State. They lost all those games, and at the individual high point of those, the odds of going 0-6 in those games were about 1 in 50,000. This is that one, evidently, out of that 50,000, because Kansas found a way to lose every single one of those games.
So you're saying there's a chance, man. That they were
50,000 shot that they lose all six of those games, and they did.
Hey, they're playing on house money at this point. They have nothing to lose, and that makes them scary. And even Chris Klieman knew that. He considered them the best 2-5 team in the country. Mm-hmm. That's pretty accurate, to be honest with you. That's a scary football team, and Jalen Daniels has been playing much better the last couple weeks.
Yeah, he definitely has been. I mean, he was the best quarterback last week, Pro Football Focus-wise. Did have the one pick, but he ran the ball more than we've seen him run. And he ran for as many yards as Devin Neal did. I thought that the way Kansas played was really good, obviously having a solid second half. They end up just falling short. They in moments, though, for whatever reason, in the moments that matter most, it might be a Jalen Daniels interception. It might be a penalty. It could be any sort of – it could be the fumble. Anything that could go wrong kind of has for Kansas, which makes you feel bad in a way. But if you look at, for the people that went and said, there's no way KU is going to win this game, I didn't understand that, because we've seen them lead in every single one of their games, where Kansas might not make a bowl game this year. But I think this upcoming week, when they take on BYU, or they take on Iowa State this upcoming week, I think that's a chance for them to pull off a huge upset. They take on BYU the following week, that's a chance to pull a huge upset. Like, I don't know if they're going to be dominated in either one of those games where their chances of winning are just totally eliminated because of the capabilities they've got in Jalen Daniels and the rest of that team.
A great story going on. Let's go to switch to national games here for a few minutes. Indiana, great story. Kurt Cignetti comes in there from James Madison. 13 players. He was rated. Indiana was rated in the transfer portal for guys that were there before Cignetti. 13 guys come over from James Madison. Speaking of losing your quarterback, Curtis Rourke, who's off to a fantastic year, 15 touchdowns to three picks, didn't play in this game, and Tavon Jackson, their backup quarterback. So this is the art of having a good backup quarterback like that Indiana does. Indiana goes to 8-0 for the first time since 1967. It's the only team in college football in the last 20 years to go eight games into the season without having a deficit in a game. Unbelievable story as they go to undefeated or 8-0 and stay undefeated. Great storyline in college football.
Yeah, I think they might be the best story in all of college football. You mentioned Tavon Jackson. He was a former four-star recruit to Tennessee, ended up getting, and then they got Nico Iamaleava. He ends up transferring back home to Indiana, where he's from, and he is, you know, a really solid quarterback. Kurt Cignetti, I think it was Rick Neuheisel, said he's the next Nick Saban in the way that he runs his program, and all you needed to see was him pissed off when they were up 42-7 against Nebraska, and it's like, okay, this guy looks like Nick Saban. He reminds us of that sort of coach. He's fired up. They've won every single game by double digits. You say, well, they haven't played anybody. I mean, it doesn't matter as long as you keep on winning games. And they have one big game coming against Ohio State. Indiana could legitimately go 11-1 and make the playoff. I think there's a real possibility of that.
100%. We saw Texas, Vanderbilt. Texas gets a 27-24 win. This was number 5 ranked Texas, number 25 Vanderbilt. Hey, Vanderbilt had a chance to knock off Texas and Alabama this year. That would have been unbelievable. They don't get the win, but props to them, man. That team, Texas has gotten a couple wake-up calls in the SEC, and certainly that was one of them.
No, 100%. Vandy was able to hang in there tight. I mean, they were down by double digits, ended up finding a way to come back and make it interesting. Vandy plays LSU later in the year and also Tennessee, so the idea of them spoiling some people's seasons isn't necessarily over yet, especially with Tennessee and them being ranked as of this weekend 7th in the country. LSU losing to A&M is tough, but Vandy could play spoiler potentially for a couple other schools, and I think they're going to make a bowl game. They play Auburn next week and then South Carolina after that. They can get one more win for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Another big national game. Again, one of the five games that went with two teams that were both ranked. A&M 38, LSU 23. A&M storms back in this game. Listen, LSU's got a ton of talent. They have the best offensive line with Will Campbell and Emory Jones in college football, to be honest with you. But Texas A&M, completely physical. This team now 5-0 in the SEC. Look out for the Aggies. Mike Elko is doing a tremendous job since he came over from Duke. That team is a machine right now.
Yeah, those guys are playing very well. 242 rushing yards. I mean, they didn't even need very good pass. They only had 134 combined passing yards in that game, and they smoked LSU from basically the second quarter on. They ended up winning that game by, you know, with a comfortable margin, of 15. And Elko had a little bit of shots at Jimbo, too. He's like, we don't have a coaching. You don't have a coach who's going to BS anymore and talk fast. Like, this is a real program. You need to come and play for us. So A&M plays Texas later in the year, and that could be – I don't know if that's one to necessarily determine. If they're both only have one loss, they both probably make the playoffs.
That's going to be a fun game.
That's going to be a very fun game. It might be the most expensive ticket in all of college football this year, actually. That one is bank. But, yeah, A&M are way better than people thought, I think, coming into the season.
BYU remains undefeated in the Big 12. Of course, Iowa State had the week off. They're still undefeated. The funny thing is, all these teams that were kind of top five in the media poll in the Big 12, like Utah, had a horrible loss. I don't know what's going on at Utah, but a horrible loss to a Houston team that's not very good. They lose to them, but nobody's picking them. Then the Big Ten, you know, Indiana, we just spoke to them. They were picked 17th in the media preseason poll. It just shows you how wild and different college football is. But BYU wasn't expected to be a good team in the Big 12, but yet they continue to go out and roll and beat a very pesky UCF team.
Yeah, there's nothing like college football, Bank. You know this as good as I do. And if you're not watching college football, it's been providing you a very fun and entertaining past few weeks.
So
and we're
fun.
Even going to get more rivalry games next week, Georgia, Florida, and all those other ones. Who knows what can happen? It's the sport of college football, and that's why we love it so much.
I hate the fact they don't call it the world's largest cocktail party anymore. I mean, come on, man.
In Florida, Bank, they still do. When I was in Florida, we still called it that.
Well, and they should, because what's what
I
I'll
know
be doing
changed,
to them.
Actually.
Drew, fun talking to you, as always. Look forward to talking to you next week. Who knows when, whenever you decide to answer your phone. So we'll talk to you then, my friend.
I promise I'll be there at 11 o'clock, Coach. No more being late. Thank you for having me.
All right, Drew. Take care, my friend. Good stuff, Drew Nixon. Come up next, though. We make our NFL picks of the week with the point spread. Quentin is red hot at this point. 6-1 to this point. 4-2-1. Which direction are we going? There's a real interesting point spread going back and forth of the Commanders game. It might screw up my prediction. We'll discuss that next. Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Quentin Morris. The fastest 2 hours in sports radio right here at 96.5 The Fan. We have so much fun doing this every Sunday morning that time flies. But it's now time for our NFL upsets of the week with the point spread. Quentin is an amazing 6-1. Follow this guy if you want to make some cash. I'm 4-2-1, so I'm still making you cash as well. Quentin and I need our own show beforehand. Oh, yeah, let me tell you something. I'm 6-1 this year. Go with me. I'll make you money at some point. That's what you need to be.
Oh, God.
We need to beat those guys.
That's cringe.
Have the cigarettes going in the background. Yeah, slam the whiskey. Yeah, there you go. Go with the Commanders today at +1.5. All right, Quinn, we'll start with you since you are the money man at this point, 6-1 on the season. Where are you going? Because this I'll get to it. The lines today have been going,
Insane. Crazy.
We use FanDuel just to be on the same page.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. I'll take the +4.5 over the Cardinals.
Not so fast, my friend. We're now at 5.5, so you're even better now.
It just shifted, literally?
We're at 5.5
now. All right, dude. Then I love this. Heck yeah, I'll take them.
It's back to 4.5 now.
Oh, my God. You're killing me, Bink.
I'm saying, man, I keep hitting refresh. It keeps you're 4.5. Sorry.
Okay. I'm gonna take the Cardinals. They're facing the Dolphins. Tua's coming back, first game back. We all know that if for injured quarterbacks, it takes time to get back in that rhythm.
Tyreek Hill's playing, but been banged up.
Yeah, but he's been out for a month. I do think that the Cardinals are sneaky good. I think Kyler Murray is a very talented quarterback, and that, you know, against this Dolphins defense, I think Kyler Murray can make some stuff happen. I'm getting more than a field goal. You know, I think this game is going to be close. Give me the Cardinals +4.5.
I like that. I like that pick a lot by you. Here's the game that I started looking at beginning of the week, Quentin. And I threw it on the rundown early on. And that's the Commanders. It was the Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams bowl, right? And it didn't look like Jaden Daniels was going to play. So the line was 3.5 points. I always thought he would, to be honest with you. I thought Jaden Daniels would end up playing. He's that kind of guy. It was 3.5. Now, the Commanders are still they went to the favorite this morning. When we showed up this morning, they were 1-point favorites. Then 1.5-point favorites. Now they're 1.5-point dogs. Ooh, very tempted on this one, Quentin. But there's another game that's drawn my eye. The Dallas Cowboys at the 49ers for tonight's Sunday Night Football. This game switched from 4.5. It's at 5.5 now. So now I get the extra point on this because I'm going Dallas taking the 5.5 against a very depleted. I know Debo Samuel's coming back, but still, that 49ers team has been decimated by injuries. Dallas, they've been called out by Troy Aikman, called out the receiving routes last week. Jerry Jones was on his radio show again this week.
Oh, you mean he didn't fire him?
He did not. He didn't fire anybody. But he laid it down on Mike McCarthy, saying we just designed bad plays and whatever. So not good for Mike McCarthy. Dallas has got the incentive to go out there and play well. But 5.5 is a lot of points for a depleted San Francisco team like we've seen. And I wasn't impressed by them at all last week. I know the Chiefs and Spagnuolo have that magic elixir against that team, that 3 picks by Brock Purdy. I didn't think Jordan Mason looked good in that game. They only gave Isaac Grinda the ball one time. But give me, and then you have the Ayuk injury, and you've got all this going on with the 49ers. Give me Dallas +5.5.
I honestly, that was one of the games I was looking at early this morning. If the question is going to come down, can Jordan Mason run the football? If the 49ers can find that run game again like they had earlier in the year, then 49ers have got this. But if they continue to struggle, then, you know, this is going to be a very close game. So I think that's a very smart pick by you.
I see the writing is on the wall for Dallas, man. You know, it is.
They have a lame duck head coach.
They do. They've been criticized left and right by their legends like Aikman. Jerry Jones has been all over them. So yes, give me there. Coming up at noon today, we do have the Eagles at the Bengals. The Bengals 2.5-point favorites. No T. Higgins in this game. Expect Jamar Chase to have a big game in this one. Ravens and Browns at noon. Go Browns, man. Just beat the Ravens. The flavor of the week, beat them. Titans and Lions, not interesting there at all. The Titans suck. Will Levis not playing, not that it matters if he's playing or not. I mean, honestly, it doesn't. DeAndre Hopkins, now a Chief, not a Titan. That defense got exposed against Buffalo when they got there, and I took the big L. they stayed in the game. Like, the first half of that game, they were right there with them. The Titans weren't. The Cardinals and Dolphins, we clearly went over that as well. Not a ton of great games. I guess there's one interesting. The Colts are 4-3 going to Houston, playing the 5-2 Texans. That should be pretty interesting. Panthers, Broncos, there's a bunch of in the NFL this week. We don't have the prime games. The Bears Commanders should be good, though, man, between the Williams and Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels Bowl. Go Jaden Daniels. Like CDOT being Washington DOT. I'm going for the Commanders.
You did, talked about him all during the draft season.
I know. I'm going for it. Monday Night Football, we get the Giants and Steelers. Snooze on that one. Chiefs pregame. Art Haynes comes your direction. Then the game. Don't forget, you can listen right here. 96.5 The Fan. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.